Chapter 4. A Room Full of Demons. Rick and Mama came home without Papa. Mama's face was puffy, and fresh tears fell at the sight of her four other children, who she gathered into her arms, somehow making certain to give each his or her own personal squeeze. Then she drew a handkerchief from her pocket and wiped her eyes as she led them into the kitchen and slumped into a chair. Loretta sat next to her again and nestled herself into her arms. Robbie, the Hubinskis, and Serge sat or stood in various places while Rennie leaned against the hard wooden frame of the doorway. Rick stood just inside it with his hands in his pockets. He looked from one questioning face to another and answered them with despondent shrug. Serge handed him a glass of wine and he sat down at one end of the table. The darkness of his hair and eyes and skin, which normally shone handsomely, now seemed to turn down the light in the whole room. His speechlessness was painful, and Rennie was unable to take her eyes from him. Finally, Serge said, "Well, how long are you going to make us wait? Hey, we'd better stay calm. No one wants to keep you in the dark." Serge's face had a look of great impatience, but Rick went on before he could say anything more. "They wouldn't listen to me. They said they know all about Papa. I don't know what they meant by that. I know they know all about Papa, and it's nothing to arrest him for, but they're taking him away, and they wouldn't say where. It's not just him, it's Frank, too, and several others from up in Dominion. They're all down at the station. Frank DeVita? What will happen to his lumber yard? And what will Louisa do with those two little babies? Who'll feed them?" Mrs. Hubinski was horrified. "Not Papa, that's sure," said Serge. They'd been many times Papa had arranged for the Italian club to collect money and food for the families of men who were sick or out of work. It was 8 o'clock and still light outside, but the kitchen was taking on the dull gray of the dust. Robbie, sitting next to Rick at the table, gazed up at him with his mouth half open. "Are they hurting him?" he wanted to know. "No, the men are all just sitting there at the station. They had a good supper. They're not in jail or anything." Rennie was trying to fight the terrible tightness in her throat. Mrs. Hubinski put food around, giving her a nudge to help. That was good. Better to move than stand like a stone, aching. "They are pitifully little," then sat around. Many Italian families, including the De Vitas, lived at the tranny's end of the street and around the neighboring corners. They and other good friends as well were in and out, comforting, exclaiming, and crying. Rennie found a chair near the corner of the kitchen where she could listen but not be noticed. She felt she had goosebumps all up and down her arms, even though she still wore Rick's warm sweater. She pressed and folded the sleeves close to her arms, trying to make them fit her more snugly. The sound seemed to sink into her. Mama and Loretta, wrapped in each other's arms, never stopped weeping. Louisa DeVita cried, too, as she rocked her infant and let her whimpering 2-year-old squeeze between her legs. In deep voices, the men spoke of Mussolini and Italia. Dear Italia, what would happen now? The other women were up and down, running water for coffee, washing up cups, comforting always. "You must be strong, Caterina, Louisa. We must all be strong. We must help each other." And why? Why? All evening, everyone kept crying. Why? Because Papa was president of the club, and DeVita too. was a leader in it, because they kept the idea of Italy alive, because they spread care in the community. But those are good things, Loretta protested through sniffles. Mama shook her head. There is a war. She was sitting heavily, her hands holding one of Loretta's in her lap. It was too confusing. Rennie stayed quiet, nothing to say, nothing to ask. Robbie, too, hadn't spoken since supper. She fixed her eyes on him from across the room. Papa was gone, and there was Robbie. Hateful, hateful toad, I'm rubbing toothpaste in your hair. Oh, yummy, green and gooey all over. Papa will get you. He'll give you a licking and lock your bicycle in the shed for a month. But it was she who had angered Papa that morning, and it was her badness he would remember, not Robbie's. She realized she was biting her nails, and she stuck her hands deep in the pockets of the sweater. Her fingers touched a piece of metal, the key, she thought, and pulled it out. Rick would need it when he went to the bakery in the morning. But instead of the key, she pulled out Tom McLean's ID bracelet. Amazed, she held it in her lap and turned it over and over, admiring its shininess. It had been on Julie's table right next to where she had been sitting. But how had it come to be in her pocket? The lynx nestled coolly in her hand, settling into the shape of her palm like a small, tame snake. The words Thomas McLean shone up at her. She stared at it. Tom the soldier? And suddenly the snake turned mean. She glowered and shoved the bracelet back in her pocket. Across the kitchen, the radio droned ominously. Cigarette smoke circled the air like the tails of genies set free. Its smell mingled with the smell of strong coffee, but there was no magic. Serge hadn't sat since supper. He paced the floor back and forth to the window, flicking cigarette ashes out of the back door, running his fingers across the top of his head as if looking for a swatch of hair long enough to grab. There wasn't one, and finally, in frustration, he shouted, "There must be hundreds of Italian boys in the army, and now they're arresting their fathers? I'm so glad I decided not to join up." At that, Mama jumped from her seat. "You decided?" she accused, breaking her gloom. The two stared at each other from across the table, Serge, the muscles beneath his shirt sleeve, looking hard. Mama, her rounded arms and bosom, normally so comfortable, now strong in their fierceness. Rick tried to help. "Ma, he was only talking." "Only talking?" Her hand niffed the air. Her words bit. "And you? What are you going to do now? Back to school? In September, yes? And me here to run the bakery alone or close it down? Then how will we eat? Mama, Papa will be home long before then." "You don't know. No one knows, do they?" She broke into fresh sobs, and Loretta took her hands to sit down again. Others in the room began to soothe each other with low mumbles. A few tears came to Rennie's eyes. Her fingers had gone back to her mouth, and the image of Jeannie's had faded. Mrs. Hobinski warmed some milk, gave it to Robbie and her, and told them to go to bed. They had school tomorrow. From opposite ends of the room, they each sipped it down slowly, but neither went to bed. At 11, Rick and Serge hushed everyone and turned up the radio. The Prime Minister was about to speak. There was silence around the kitchen. Rennie rested her eyes on Mama's fat ceramic pig, which she kept on the counter. It was pink with fancy blue spots and had a hole in its back where Mama kept nickels and dimes for rainy day spending. A rainy day, she'd explain, was a day when there was nothing serious or important going on. From the radio came a voice hard and somber. Italy has entered the war on the side of Hitler. Canada is at war with Italy. All Italian men who are thought to be suspicious will be interned. Suspicious? Who has Cosi ever hurt? Mama was near tears again. Now looking at that dumb pig made Rennie want to cry. Everything was serious. She walked to where Rick was sitting and let him put his arm around her waist. Almost too frightened to hear the answer, she asked, "What does intern mean?" "It means put in prison." His eyes met hers. Through their sadness, they seemed to say, "Don't worry," but her heart beat faster and her hands went clammy. "Papa behind bars like a bad man?" "Italian traitors," someone shouted from the front yard. "Down with Italy." Rennie jumped. She looked toward Rick again, but suddenly everyone was up and rushing toward the sound. She and Rick followed. An egg smashed against the window and oozed its inside down the glass. "Who was that?" cried Luisa DeVita. "They're gone." Serge banged his hand on the window frame. The sound thudded through the room. He opened his mouth to utter an oath, but he caught Rennie's eyes and changed his mind. "There are little kids in the house," he said instead. Mama walked to the window and looked out. Others moved away as if to give her space, but Rennie pushed herself into her arms, finding a welcoming spot. It was good to be there all alone, wrapped in the big soft cushion that was Mama.